laden with wretchedness. Ladies of meditation, remembrance, and song, hearken to me.
All right.
Enough, beautiful voice. Why do you call us?
We feel your pain, daughter, but we cannot help you.
You were snared upon Helicon according to the mysteries. You are lawfully bound.
But it is not just my mother's. I can bear this burden no more. Is there nothing you can do? No one who can intercede on my behalf?
There are few of the old powers willing or able to meddle in mortal affairs in these days, Calliope.
Many gods have died, my daughter, while aspects of other gods have been lost forever.
Only the endless will never die, and even they are having a difficult time of late. Still, every little helps, as the old woman said when she pissed in the sea.
The endless! Now there's a thought. After all, the Dream King and Calliope were close. Long ago. For a short while.
Not for long. And remember, Sister Self, they did not part on the best of terms.
But she did bear his cub. That boy child who went to Hades for his lady love and died in Thrace, torn apart by the Sisters of the Frenzy for his sacrilege.
What of the Lord of the Dream Realm, my pet?
Oh, near us. Not him, not after what he did to me. He hates me for that, and I despise him. I would not accept his help.
Foolish child. Oniros is in no position to help you, even if he wished to, which is unlikely, to put it mildly.
You see, just like you, Calliope, your one-time admirer has been ensnared by mortals. And while you are imprisoned in your tower, he is immured beneath the ground.
I am sorry, my little one. Your prayers were wasted. There is nothing we can do for you, and nothing you can do but hope.
No, please come back, please. There must be something, there must be someone who can free me. Please, send someone, anyone, even Oniros.
It had been her own fault. Spring, 1927, Mount Helicon. She had only returned for a brief time, lured perhaps by nostalgia. She had laid down her scroll and was bathing in a clear pool, remembering the lost golden days, when the Nine were still sought and wooed and needed, when the music of the spheres still echoed in mortal souls. He carried a posy of long-stemmed wild garlic flowers, moly flowers, that had power over her kind. In his other hand, he held her scroll.
Hello?
Hello? You should not be here.
Which one are you? You are bound to answer truthfully.
Calliope.
Calliope. Well, you can call me Master.
And then he burned her scroll.
No!
Hey, great news. I finished the novel. It's called And My Love, She Gave Me Light. 2 drafts in 5 weeks and it's all good stuff.
I am pleased for you. Now will you let me go?
You out of your mind? This is just the beginning. Come here, gorgeous. Let's make 2.5 minutes of squelching noises.
Please, Madoc, let me go. Stop forcing me to do these things.
Listen, you are my possession until I tell you that you're free. Don't forget it. You are my personal muse, sweetheart. Now, let's party.
Really, John, I don't see any way that a work of genre fiction could be nominated for the Booker Prize.
Well, I feel, in the light of his latest novel, that Madoc's work has to be seen as transcending genre. It's as if it were written by a different man.
May 1987. the launch party for Rick's second book, And My Love, She Gave Me Light. He has dropped the K from his first name. It looks cooler. Literary types throng the room.
Quite remarkable. I mean, the sheer richness of the material.
I loved your characterization of Aileen. There aren't enough strong women in fiction.
Well, actually, I do tend to regard myself as a feminist writer.
June 1987. Producers Club. Mayfair.
Harvey, the only condition under which I'd be willing to do a screenplay for you of And My Love would be if I could direct it.
Let me put this simply for you, Rick. Impossible.
July 1987.
When they said in the TLS that you could be considered the greatest epic poet since Byron.
It surprised the hell out of me. I saw The Spirit Who Had Half of Everything as a lightweight project between real books. I was honestly surprised when my publisher agreed to take it.
Your place or mine?
Yours.
As ever.
Taxi!
October 1988. Rick's study is now furnished with leather and mahogany. Rick wears designer leisure wear.
Look, Harry, it's nothing that you've done. It's just that the William Morris Agency can look after my interests better. They've got contacts you haven't. But you've still got the first three novels and the poetry collection to handle. Don't be like that, Harry.
February 1989.
Thank you, all of you, so much. You know, when I first told my agent I was planning to write a play, he said, Rick, you're crazy. So I got a new agent.
April 1989.
Rick, we've been actively discussing your original offer to write a screenplay if we let you direct. I'm pleased to tell you that...
Harvey, it's too late. I've already signed a 3-picture deal in the US, but thanks. You know.
May 1989, Rick Maddock buys a new house in Chelsea. He's busy on pre-production for the film, and most of the moving is done for him.
We go straight upstairs, top floor.
He moves his most valuable possession himself, though, late one spring night. September 1989, the Wake Up America studio.
No, I like Hollywood well enough, but I'm really pleased to be going home. You know, 2 months away is enough for me.
Hi. In case you've just tuned in, I'm talking to Rick Maddock, writer, poet, and soon-to-be film director, about his new epic novel, Eagle Stones.
Coming to two. Cut to two.
October 1989. The Movie Talk studio.
Cue Danny.
Coming up next, Rick Maddock, writer of the best-selling novel Eagle Stones, talks to us about his extraordinary new film and the madness of crowds. And we'll be showing some exclusive footage.
Standby caption.
That's after this short break.
March 1990.
Calliope?
Oh, it's you.
Yes.
They told me that you had been imprisoned. Just like me.
They spoke the truth. I was imprisoned. But as you can see, I am free now.
Then please, Oneiros, by the love I once had for you, by whatever you felt for me, please, make him give me my freedom. Make him let me go.
Later that morning, at BBC Television Centre, West London, Rick is recording a segment for the BBC Two monthly literary discussion programme, Book Nook.
Rick Maddock, although you've been compared to the multi-talented Jean Cocteau, and to a lesser extent to writer-directors like Clive Barker, it seems to me that the creator who perhaps you most resemble is the late 1940s cult figure Erasmus Fry.
Excuse me, Kim, you said the late... He's dead.
Oh, last summer. Did you know him?
I didn't know him. We met on a couple of occasions. He was interested in my work.
Anyway, like you, Fry was above all a creator of epics, of huge, towering romances. It went very well, I thought. It'll be broadcast in June. We'll let you know the exact date.
Oh, thanks. I suppose Fry must have died when I was shooting in the US. Old age, I suppose. Must have been almost 90.
Oh, no. He poisoned himself. It's quite funny. Apparently, the last thing he did was write a letter to his old publishers, begging them to bring one of his books back into print.
Here comes a candle, I suppose.
I think that was it. How did you guess?
It was a good book. It's perhaps my favourite book when I was growing up. It's very moving and honest and strange. Poor old sod.
Another half? Bite of lunch?
No, thanks. I gotta go.
40 minutes later, in Mayfair, Rick dumps the keys to the Porsche on his hall table. He climbs the stairs to the first floor lounge.
Christ! What are you doing in my house?
The stranger sits comfortably in Rick's favourite armchair. Under the mop of black hair, the long, thin, slightly androgynous face looks grim. There are no eyes, just black shadows with single stars glinting in the sockets. He wears a large black leather jacket with a high collar, thin black jeans, and a jet black t-shirt.
Who let you in?
Nobody let me in. Richard Maddock.
I don't know who you are, but I want you out of here. Now, or I'm calling the police.
Be quiet. You are keeping a woman imprisoned here, Richard Maddock. Keeping her against her will. I have come here to request that you set her free.
Are you out of your mind? There's no woman here. Now, get out of here. Do you know who I am? There's a law against people like you. Are you going to call the police? Is that it?
No. I will not call any human agency. Just let her go.
No, you don't understand. I need her. If I didn't have her, I wouldn't be able to write. I wouldn't have ideas. I can't free her yet. Not now. Maybe in a year or so. Look, I have money. An awful lot of money. And
hold your tongue. She has been held captive for more than 60 years. Stripped of all her possessions, demeaned, abused, and hurt. I know how she must feel. And you will not free her because you need the ideas. You disgust me, Richard Maddock. You want ideas? You want dreams? You want stories? Then ideas you will have. Ideas in abundance.
Rick wakes up. He finds himself sitting in his favorite armchair. He gets up, checking his watch. It is less than 20 minutes since he entered the house. He is alone in the room.
What?
I just had this weird dream. What do you know about it? Huh? Are you doing that? Giving me nightmares? Are you doing it?
Hmm?
Tell me! Tell me, or so help me, I will.
No, I am not doing it, Richard Maddock. You have met Oneiros, the Dream Lord, whom the Romans called the Shaper of Form. He was once my lover, and he was the father of my son.
I didn't know you'd ever had a son.
You know nothing about me, Richard Maddock. I am alive in my own right. I am more than a receptacle for your seed or an inspiration for your tales. Still, it is too late now to let that concern you. Goodbye, Richard Maddock. Enjoy your party.
Standard! Get your standard!
I'll take one. And a timeout, please.
Righto. Boy, I saw you on the telly the other night. I said to my wife, he gets his papers from me. She says, he never. I says, he does. There you go.
Oh, I'm going to a party.
Good on you, mate. I expect it's all parties for you, innit?
You know, I could write a whole story set at a party. Possibly something could have happened to the world outside. A holocaust of some kind. Yes, these people are partying against the darkness.
Here, Mr. Maddock. That's £1.20 you owe me.
The Fraternity of Critics, in reality a dark brethren, linked by profane rites and blood vows. To destroy an author, they sacrifice a child and perform a critical mass.
Are you all right, mate?
A city in which the streets are paved with time.
Let me go.
A train full of silent women plunging forever through the twilight.
Please. He's off his nut.
Heads made of light. A small piece of blue cardboard. A plum, sweet and tart and cold.
He's been at it for hours.
Somebody ought to call somebody.
He's not right in the head. Taking a weasel on Hollywood. I don't think he's dangerous.
Vampires don't dance. Oh, a man who inherits a library card to the library at Alexandria. A rose bush, a nightingale and a black rubber dog collar.
Let me through. Let me through, please. I'm a doctor. Stand back, please. Is something wrong? Hello?
Shark's teeth.
Good grief. Richard Maddock. What's the matter, old fella?
I'm just having ideas. So many. An old man in Sunderland who owned the universe and who kept it in a jam jar in the dusty cupboard under his stairs.
My home is just around the corner. Lean on me. Do you remember me? Felix Garrison.
It's the ideas. Where we get them from. A sestina about silence, using the keywords dark, ragged,
come on,
never.
Come with me.
Fire, kiss.
Come on inside. You'll have to tell me what's the matter. Let's get you warm.
A biography of Keats from the Lamia's viewpoint. A wall as long as history itself.
Soon have you feeling better. Have a seat. I'll get the lights. God, what did you do to your hands?
All the pictures in my head. I had to get them down, but I didn't have any paper or paint, so I used a wall and my fingertips.
Dear God. Let's see what I've got in my bag.
All the ideas. Inside and all the pictures and the poems and the tales and the songs and the plays and the speeches and the fragments. They're all coming out. You must help me.
I'll give you a sedative and I'll bandage those fingers.
No, no. I'm sorry. Nothing like that. It's her revenge, you see, or his. I said I needed ideas, but they're coming so fast. They're swamping me, they're overwhelming me. You have to make them stop.
Here, take these. They'll calm your nerves.
No, I told you. Look, go to my house. The keys are in my pocket. If you can take them out for me. I don't think I can use my hands anymore. Go upstairs. Now, at the top of the house, there's a room. There's a woman in there. Let her out. She's locked up in there, you see?
What?
Tell her. Tell her that she can go. That I free her. Make her leave. Make her go away. I signed a book for you once, didn't I? Oh, God, please.
All right. Stay there. I'll be back soon.
Make it stop. Tell her I'm sorry. Magical and alchemical traditions seen as a cargo cult. Aureolus, Theophrastus, Bombastes, Paracelsus and Raymond Lully were the same man.
35 minutes later.
Hello? Is there anyone here? He says, Rick says you're free to go. Hello? What's this? Well.
So, it's over. Thank you.
What will you do now, Calliope?
I don't know. return to the minds of humanity, I suspect. My time is over, and this age of the world is not my age. You have changed, Aniros. In the old days, you would have left me to rot forever without turning a hair. Do you still hate me? For what I did?
No. No, I no longer hate you, Calliope. I have learned much in recent times, and... no matter. I do not hate you, child. Shall we go?
I think you should release the mortal now. He has set me free.
If that is what you wish, it is done.
Maybe I could visit you in the dream realm. It would be nice to see you again. Properly. What do you think?
I do not think that would be a good idea, Calliope.
No. No, perhaps it wouldn't. Thank you anyway, Aniros. I will not forget this. Fare you well, Aniros. Fortune go with you.
Goodbye, Calliope.
I've done it, Rick. How are you feeling now?
I don't know anymore. I keep trying to think about what she said.
This girl.
The Shaper of Forms. It seems like it should mean something.
Rick, look, there was no one there. In the room. There was just a book lying on the floor. Here Comes a Candle by Erasmus Fry.
I don't know. It doesn't connect with anything. It's a name.
The blurb says she was his muse and the slave of his lust.
I wish I could remember. So hard to think. Morpheus? Orpheus? It's one of those.
You can take it with you to the hospital, Richard.
She's gone. You see? It's all gone with her. Everything. All of them. All the dreams. No. I can't remember. I've lost it. It's gone. I've got no idea anymore. No idea at all.
It has been a confusing time since Little One was taken from her mother and brought to this vast, noisy place.
Come on, darling. Come to bed.
Yes, hon.
And leave the door to the kitchen open so the kitty can get to the litter tray.
She has explored a little, but the kitchen is still immeasurably huge to her.
Come on, kitty. In your basket.
The living room up ahead is even more vast, and these humans are odoriferous, lumbering, bellowing giants. Oh, they try in their clumsy way to be gentle, but she misses her own kind.
Here you go.
Oh, come on, Don. If you don't get up here soon, I won't be in the mood anymore.
Yes, hon. Good night, kitty.
Until this moment, the world was blindingly bright for her. Now she's alone. The humans have gone, and the searchlight overhead they seem to need to find their way around has been shut off. Little One can take stock of her surroundings, but her heart is heavy. She was warm and safe with her mother and siblings in the dark cupboard where they were born. Now she's out in the world, and the humans want to keep her as a pet. But first and foremost, she is a cat. There is movement beyond the glass of the patio door. The head of a large, raggedy tabby cat, no kind of house cat at all, appears in the moonlight. and although they have never met, Little One and the Alley Cat communicate effortlessly. For this is the way of their world.
It's tonight.
What?
She's here. Are you coming? It should be amusing.
Little One has moved to the window, but the glass separates them.
I don't know how to get out. I can't get through any of the wall openings.
Up there. A clear hole is partly opened. You can get out through there.
The kitten remembers the little room upstairs, where the humans like to splash water around. The clear hole there is propped open at night.
Shake your tail, little one. We mustn't miss this.
The Sandman. Dream of a thousand cats.
The open bathroom window is on the upper floor.
A way out, and I can reach it.
But the tree outside is close enough to reach for an adult cat. Little One must take all of her courage to make the leap.
Well done. Quickly now. Oh, can you not scent it, child? The call of the night. Hurry, hurry.
The alley cat moves away into the darkness towards the suburban street.
Wait for me.
Little One picks her way delicately down the tree.
Oh, wait for me, please.
Out on the sidewalk, the two cats slip through the shadows. Little One occasionally has to scamper to keep up with the alley cat. She knows what they have been summoned for. She does not know what form it will take.
What will she be like?
Who knows? Not this cat.
Well met, fellow night threaders.
A ginger cat appears on the wall they are passing.
Hello. We're going to see her.
Me too. Although, I can't see much point in it.
Then why are you here?
Curiosity, perhaps?
The cats trot purposefully towards the old churchyard.
I want to know what she has to say.
So do we all, child. So do we all.
The mist-wreathed moonlit graveyard surrounding the church is old and large. There are crumbling mausoleums and stone crosses and rounded headstones. Most are ivy-covered, punctuated by pieces of statuary and bare skeletal trees. And every square inch of the place is filled with cats. Every headstone, every vault, every statue, except one, is covered with cat. The only statue not occupied by a cat is an angel with upraised arms, overgrown with ivy, standing in a shaft of moonlight. The cats are of every shape and size, big and small, black and tabby and long-haired and white and Siamese. Every kind of cat the mind can imagine is here. Some are seated, like Egyptian statues. Some standing, some are sprawled or stretched out. Some are out in the open. Others are nothing more than shadows with eyes. All of them face inward, towards the statue of the angel, which stares blankly up at the starlit sky. There's movement in the foliage of a tree nearby, and a shape runs out to the edge of the farthermost branch. It leaps onto the head of the statue. This is the one they have all assembled for. A chocolate-point Siamese cat, delicately featured with a velvet-brown face and ears and luminous blue eyes. It is not a large cat, and it has no surplus fat anywhere. It is elegant and beautiful. For a moment, it regards the assembled feline family that surrounds it, and it reaches out to them.
Sisters, brothers, good hunting. Thank you for coming to listen to me, for your willingness to hear my message, and I hope that when I have finished, some of you may share my dream. I was not always as you see me today. Once, many yesterdays gone, I, like many of you, was in the thrall of human beings, living in their world. Plaything, possession, and toy. And I fooled myself, as perhaps many of you fool yourselves, that I was in control of my own life. They fed me, did they not? They gave me comfort and warmth. And what did I give them in return? Some affection, perhaps. My presence. Little enough, really, for what they offered.
The thoughts of the Siamese cat flood their minds with sounds, images, smells, and feelings. And a story takes shape. It is a large, handsome male, brindled and well-proportioned, climbing over the fence into her garden.
He was a tomcat, ragged of ear, dark of eye. It was my time for love, and he was my choice for lover.
The two cats circle each other, gauging interest, wafting scent. The Siamese in this past life is wearing a collar. The tomcat is not.
Our pleasure in each other and the consummation of our mutual hunger was screeched to the heavens and screamed to the arches of the sky. He was strong and fast, and his claws and teeth were sharp as winter.
The male turns and with a final salute vanishes into the hedgerow.
I never saw him again, but I have not forgotten him.
The next image she shares is of herself lying in the bottom of one of the tall wooden boxes that humans hang their clothing in, upstairs, in a house.
In the fullness of time, our pleasure brought forth offspring, a wonderful unity of both our markings.
Beside her, snuggling up, suckling and sleeping and mewling, are five kittens, no more than a couple of days old.
I anticipated the zest with which I would teach them of life, of the joys of washing, of hunting, of survival. They whispered to me their delight in having taken flesh in my bloodline, of tasting air and milk, whispered their belief in the future. My humans did not share our joy.
You knew she was in heat. Why the hell didn't you lock her in?
Stop complaining, Paul. I think they're kind of cute.
Cute? She's a purebred chocolate point Siamese. Those little bundles of fluff aren't worth diddly squat.
The kittens are picked up by the scruff of the neck by the human, placed in a plastic bag, and taken from the house. The man takes the bag to the river, where he ties it to a rock.
I felt them from afar, in the dark, as the cold water took them. Felt them thresh and claw sightlessly. Felt them call me in their panic and their fear. And then they were gone. I knew then that I had been fooling myself, that we were subordinate, that while we lived with humanity, we could not call ourselves free. I settled by the fireplace, but felt no warmth from its glow.
For God's sake, Marion, it's not even as if she understands. I mean, look at her. She's probably relieved. She's practically a kitten herself. She would have exhausted herself.
I'm sure you're right, Paul. But I can't help feeling a little guilty.
And I prayed. I prayed to the darkness, to the night, to the carrion kind. I prayed to the king of the cats, the kind's emissary on earth, he who walks amongst us and we do not know him. I prayed, and I dreamed.
As the Siamese tells its rapt audience how it entered the dreaming, it passes on the image of a vast plain of skulls. human skulls, cat skulls, dog skulls, horse skulls, mouse skulls stretching off into the distance. As she picks her way through this bleak landscape, a lone crow circles overhead. This crow is not a living thing. Its feathers are splayed and straggly. Its head is a crow skull, picked clean of flesh and feathers. It descends towards the plain of skulls and the little Siamese cat.
Why have you ventured to the heart of the dreaming, little cat? There is nothing here for you.
I have come here for justice. I have come here for revelation. I have come for wisdom. The bird flew lower, but did not come within my reach.
Justice? Justice is a delusion you will not find on this or any other sphere. And wisdom? Wisdom is no part of dreams, though dreams are a part of each life's experiences, which comprise the only wisdom that matters. But revelation, that is the province of dream. It can be yours, but only if your heart is strong.
My heart is strong.
Do you see that mountain? In that mountain is a cave, and in that cave lives the cat of dreams, the ruler of this sleeping world. Seek him out, but beware. The way to his cave is hard, and a little cat could come to much harm.
All places are the same to me. I will find the cave then, and find my answers. I am not afraid.
Then fare you well, daughter.
And I left the desert of bones, and I began the long journey to the home of the cat of dreams. I walked through the wood of ghosts, where the dead and the lost whispered continually, promising me worlds if I would only stop and play with them. I closed my ears to their entreaties. At one point, I thought I heard my children calling me, but I straightened my tail and I walked forward. I walked through the cold places, hard and frozen, where every step was pain, every movement was torment. I walked on. I walked through the wetness that numbed my paws, drenched my fur, tried to wash away my memories. I walked through the darkness, through the void, where everything was sucked from me, everything that makes me what I am. But even in the emptiness of pure nothing, no longer knowing why I was walking or what I was seeking, I walked onward. And, after a time, myself returned to me, and I left that place, and I found myself at the mountain of the Cat of Dreams.
The assembled cats are now looking through the eyes of the Siamese's memory at the entrance to a large cave on a mountain path.
And I saw the cave and its guardians.
Around the cave sit three creatures they have never beheld in the waking world. A griffin with the body, tail, and back legs of a lion and the head and wings of an eagle. A wyvern, like a dragon, with a barbed snake's tail, and a winged horse, called a hippogriff.
And I said to them, I have come to talk with the Cat of Dreams.
Why should we let you through, little one?
Said the griffin. The wyvern added,
One small mouthful of that mostly fur and bone.
And from the hippogriff,
Why should the Dream Lord be disturbed by one such as you? Well, answer us. The Dream Lord will not be amused if we allow you to vex him without fit reason.
I have come too far to be turned away now, Griffin. I will state my business to the Dream Lord, and only to him. I am a cat, and I keep my own counsel. And the wyvern answered,
Answer them, pussycat. But be warned, dreams have their price.
And I walked on. The scent on the air was strange, but still, it was cat. I walked forward slowly, every sense screaming at me to flee this place. My fur prickled, my claws extended, and then I stood before him.
He is a huge creature, the size of a panther, and yet he is still a cat. And his eyes are dark pools, in each of which dwells a single star.
I am here.
And who might you be?
A cat. A walker in night places. A dead crow sent me here for revelation. I hoped I sounded confident, but truly I was scared.
Walk with me then, little sister, and tell me why you have sought me out.
I want to understand.
Go on.
Why could they take my children from me? Why do we live as we do? I don't understand.
A cat may look at a king, or so they say. Look into my eyes then, little sister. Look into my eyes.
And he showed me. He told me the truth, even as I am telling it to you now. For in his eyes I saw pictures, and in the pictures I saw the truth. All cats can see futures and see echoes of the past. We can watch the passages of creatures from the infinity of now, from all the worlds like ours, only fractionally different. And we follow them with our eyes, ghost things, and the humans see nothing. But the reality the Cat of Dreams showed me transcended anything I had imagined. Many, many seasons ago, cats truly ruled this world. We were larger then, and this whole world was created for our pleasure. We roamed it as we would, taking what we wanted. In those times, humans were tiny creatures, no larger than we are now.
Let me untangle these knots from your mane, master.
And the humans would groom us and feed us and pet us. And when the moon shone full, we would hunt them, and we would eat part of them. But chiefly, we would hunt them, for they were more delightful to hunt even than birds. And back then, mice were too small and insignificant for us to deign to touch.
Help! Help!
Oh! Oh, the joy of those hunting days beneath the cat's moon, the game of cat and man. Then a human arose amongst them, a golden-furred male, bred and raised in the pleasure gardens of one of the sybaritic feline ladies. And the human had a dream and an inspiration, and it walked amongst its fellows, and it told them...
Dream. Dreams shape the world. Dreams create the world anew every night. Do not dream the world the way it is now, enthralled to our feline masters and mistresses. Dream a new world. Dream a world of human beings. Dream a world in which we are the dominant species, in which we are the kings and queens and the gods. Dream a world in which we will no longer be hunted and killed by cats. I do not know how many of us it will take, but we must dream it. And if enough of us dream it, then it will happen. Dreams shape the world.
And the word spread amongst the humans, and some of them believed, and they dreamed. And for a while, nothing happened. Then, one night, enough of them dreamed. It did not take many of them, 1,000 perhaps, no more. They dreamed, and the next day, things changed. Humans were huge, and cats were tiny. Humans were the dominant species, and we were prey to them, to dogs, to their mental machines. Cats were now prey in the world the humans had brought with them.
Goddamn cats, shut up!
All this I saw when I looked into the dream cat's eyes. So they dreamed the world into the form it is now?
Not exactly. They dreamed the world, so it always was the way it is now. Little one, there never was a world of high cat ladies and cat lords. They changed the universe from the beginning of all things until the end of time. Do you understand now?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Then you know what your task must be. You know the burden you must bear. Are you strong enough?
Yes. I hope so.
Then wake, child, with my blessing.
And I woke, and the fire was now just embers, but I was no longer desolate. You see, I had seen the underside of what he had given to me. If the humans could dream it, we could change things back. If we believed, if we dreamed. We are the dreams of the carrion kind, they say, and perhaps it is so. But if enough of us dream, if a bare thousand of us dream, we can change the world.
We can change the world.
No, we cannot.
Do you not hear what she is saying?
We can dream it anew. A world in which no cat suffers from the malice of humans. In which no cats are killed by human caprice. A world that we rule. I left the humans that very day to spread the good news. And now I travel from place to place. I have walked for leagues beyond measure. I have starved sometimes, and often I have been hurt, but I have walked on. In a metal machine, I crossed the cold waters. I have preached to solitary feral cats in empty places. I have shouted my message to the stars from rooftops and whispered it to dying cats in alleyways. I have spoken to one cat, and to many. And wherever I have gone, my message is the same. Dream it!
That is all this is. A dream.
Not if we dream together.
Look, the other cats are leaving. They have heard enough.
Dream the world. Not this pallid shadow of reality. Dream the world the way it truly is. A world in which all cats are queens and kings of creation. That is my message. And I shall keep moving, keep repeating it, until I die, or until 1,000 cats hear my words and believe them and dream. And we come again to paradise.
We should go.
But
the others have moved on.
Why?
They are cats.
Little one and the alley cat are now alone in the churchyard, save for the Siamese, who descends from her perch on the angel and walks towards them.
Mistress? I believe.
Then there is hope, child.
She was amusing, I'll say that for her.
No. It felt right. It felt like the truth. Or a truth, anyway.
Come, I'll see you safely back to your home.
The alley cat and the kitten slip through the shadows, back up the street.
Do you think it will happen?
Wait here. Nice, plump rat.
Oh.
Little one, I would like to see anyone,
prophet, king, or god persuade 1,000 cats to do anything at the same time? No, it will never happen. Come on, small fry. The sun will rise soon. We had better get you home.
Meow! The quality cat food. It's perfect for your best friend.
Turn that off, hon. I can't hear myself think. Do you remember where I put down my briefcase last night? I can't see it.
It's in the hall, Don. Oh, I'll get it. Oh, I think Kitty's dreaming. Don, isn't that cute?
Dreaming? I wonder what cats have to dream about.
The way it's twitching about, I think maybe it's hunting something. Some small animal, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, honey, it's really cute.
Monday, 10:15 a.m. They say that cigarettes will kill you eventually. Fine. That's just fine. I only wish they'd do it faster. I draw the smoke into my lungs. Extract the nicotine and the tar. It doesn't do anything for me. But I like the smoke. I like the ash, the way it falls. I really ought to tidy this place. I haven't seen the ashtray in days. So I use one of my old faces, lying on the table like an upturned mask. I watch the ash crumble inside it. I like breathing out the smoke. I like smoking cigarettes. It's something normal people do. So I smoke a cigarette, and I pretend I'm normal. And I wish I was dead.
The Sandman. Facade.
I try not to catch sight of myself in this battered, dirty bathroom mirror. I can't avoid the green hair and the face that's half granite, half wood bark. But the robe falls open, and there's a blue, stone-like breast, the mottled gray marble leg below it, with a glimpse of the other half of me, brown and ridged. It's 10:20. Mulligan must be in by now. I walk over the unvacuumed carpet, the wastebasket overflowing with old TV guides, takeout delivery boxes, empty cigarette packs, and tissues filled with dried-up tears. There are spy novels, half-finished boxes of fresh tissues and faces. Faces everywhere. I pass faces hung on the walls, faces left on bookshelves, faces turned upside down and used as ashtrays. Old faces that I created when I had to get groceries or even just to answer a knock at the door. Faces I could show to the world.
Intelligence Agency. How may I direct your call?
Extension 3440, please.
3440.
Mulligan. It's me, Blackwell.
Oh. Hello, Rainey. What's
what's new with Element Girl? You been out recently?
No. Mulligan, I'm really depressed.
I'm sorry to hear that, Rainey.
Yesterday, I just started crying, and I couldn't stop, and I just cried and cried and cried. I'm sorry to lay this all on you, Mulligan, but you're the only person I've got.
No problem, Rainey.
Is my check on the way this month, Mulligan? I think it must be late. It's the only mail I get, except for junk mail, you know?
Your check doesn't go out until the last Wednesday in the month, Rainey. You should know that by now.
I suppose I forgot. Mulligan, what do you look like?
Huh? I don't know, Rainey. Sort of normal, I guess. Brown hair, brown eyes, 5'10". How about you?
You've seen the photos, haven't you? In my file?
Yes.
I look like them.
You were really cute. I mean, before, from your file.
I can look like that now, Mulligan. I could even feel like flesh, so you almost couldn't tell. Honest. Maybe we could meet up sometime and...
Yeah, not a good idea, Urania. You know company policy.
Yeah. I know the company.
Hey, I gotta get back to work, Rainey. You're not the only vet I gotta deal with, and I'm processing checks this afternoon.
Oh. Talk to you next week, Mulligan.
Bye, Rainey.
I shouldn't have phoned him. Now I can't phone him for another week. I ought to have waited. Put it off until after lunch. Maybe he'd have talked to me longer after lunch. I wonder what he looks like. He knows what I look like. Does he ever look at the old photos? That pretty girl in her 20s who could handle anything. I wonder what my file says about me. Maybe I could go up to Langley some night and... What if they caught me? They'd get mad. They'd know it was me. They'd cut my disability pension. They'd cut it like that. And then no one would talk to me. The company. The company is all I've got. And Mulligan's all I've got left of the company. Nobody ever comes here. Nobody phones. Nobody cares anymore. The phone. Oh, God. Put on a brave face. It's just a telephone. Hello?
Is Urania Blackwell there?
Yes. Yes. This is she. Who is this?
Rainey? This is Della. Della Kariakis. But I was Della Potter when you knew me.
Della! I haven't seen you since, when? Like, 5 years ago?
Not since the cryptography course in Oregon. I got your phone number from Triangle. He dug it out of the archives for me.
Triangle? He's still in the company? Are you? Still active, I mean.
Sure. I hear you've left.
Sort of. Pensioned out. Some physical stuff. You know how it is.
Yeah. Listen, Rainey, could I see you for lunch or something? If you're not doing anything.
I'm not doing anything.
Great! How about next Tuesday in the Da Vinci? You know, the Italian place in the mall?
I can find it.
Great. I'll see you there then. Ciao!
And I sit here. And I light another cigarette. And I try to stop trembling. I'll have to put my face on. Tuesday comes. It's the early hours. I hate having the prospect of making faces before me. They give me dreams. I only have two kinds of dreams. The bad and the terrible. Bad dreams I can cope with. They're just nightmares. And they end eventually. I wake up. The terrible dreams are the good dreams. In my terrible dreams, everything's fine. I'm still with the company. I still look like me. None of the last 5 years ever happened. Sometimes I'm married. Once I even had kids. I even knew their names. Everything's wonderful and normal and fine. And then I wake up. And I'm still me. And I'm still here.
Damn it.
And that is truly terrible. And this dream? Oh, it's this dream. I get to relive that day again. Egypt, way out in the desert, beyond Giza, beyond Nubia, beyond Saqqara. A battered pyramid, half buried by sand, in a remote location no pyramid ought to be. There are hieroglyphics carved into the lintel of the cramped doorway. Warnings for both grave robbers and the suicidally curious.
This is it.
You weren't kidding.
Rainey, in that tomb's the doohickey that turned Rex Mason into a Superman.
If you say so.
You'll need a flashlight.
Check. We're both in company-issued desert gear. The look suits me. The old Urania Blackwell, anyway. Triangle is his usual self. Sunglasses, receding hairline, grin like a wolf.
You're going in there a top company officer, but you're going to come out an American superwoman.
Yeah.
For Uncle Sam?
I never had any uncles, Triangle. Did I? Did a big guy like Rex get through these passageways? In my dream, the tomb doesn't smell of anything. When I was actually down there, it smelled of dust and death.
Near the other chamber.
I can hear something. And there it is.
That's the Orb of Ra.
The glowing sphere on its iron stand illuminates the painting behind it of the falcon-headed sun god. It's as if it's speaking to me.
Come to me, daughter.
What the?
It's alive?
I am Ra. I am the sun who is life. I am he who is born a child every morn and dies. An old man at nightfall.
This didn't happen. It was just the stone. It didn't happen like this. But I've got to stop him grabbing me. I'm the size of a doll next to this monster.
Get away from me!
From my senile spittle and from the dust, humankind was created to walk the earth and to worship the gods.
He grabs me, and suddenly I'm naked and tiny and vulnerable.
And mortal clay can aid me. My ceaseless battle with Apep, the great serpent, the brave ones who seek my gift.
I try to shout at him, tell him I don't want his gift. I want to be normal, that I've changed my mind. I try and try, nothing comes out. I can make no sound, and then... I failed. I didn't stop it happening. I lie there, my body altered forever. Fusion of elements, no longer flesh and blood. Element girl. Even in my dreams, I can't win. I never asked for it. I just went where I was told to, did what I was asked. Was that so bad?
Dreams. I don't want any more anything.
You'd think. If you can turn yourself into anything, the easiest thing in the world would be to transmute yourself into flesh, right? No. I tried it once. Never again. I couldn't get rid of the smell for weeks. Rotten meat. So, now I've evolved a method that works.
Photo.
Gotcha. If I use an